Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Warning. On this podcast, we take the cases seriously, but not ourselves.
Although, we may attempt to lighten the mood at times.
Our episodes contain graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised.
I thought this week I would start the episode.
Okay.
And get me own back on there.
Mm-hmm.
You mugged me off, you know, making out I don't know fucking Luke Combs and stuff.
I thought I was pretty fair to you.
I'm fairer and you're going to do shit.
Do you know what really annoyed me?
Mm.
When we were recording the Guess the Lyrics thing.
Yeah.
You know, you said to me at the end of it, oh, I might have to cut one or two. It's running a bit long. And I went, okay, fine.
Yeah, we're getting to like 20
minutes. You deliberately
cut
my song. He cut my song. Lads, it was Dracula by Rob Zombie. He fucking cut it. He knew what he was doing.
I don't want the starter to go on for too long.
Triggered. I understand, yeah.
People, even though they enjoy us, they're here for the true crime.
Yeah, they don't need to be listened to us shout on.
Yeah.
For too long.
So, your first song.
Mm-hmm. Let's go, champ.
This is the one I think you might get.
There's only one you think I'll get.
Yeah, I don't think you'll
get. Hang on. No, hang on. Wait a second.
These are all your songs.
They're all my songs?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. You just think it's going to be hard. I was going to say, all the songs I picked, you know very well. Go on, proceed. You're staring at me. Go on.
Look at me, fuck on me. Look at me, fuck
Triple
on...
X. Look at me.
That's the only one. I thought, I've got to give a one.
Do you know how I wish you had read that? Kath and Kim, look at me.
Oh, yeah. You in the club just a party. I'm there. I get paid a fee.
Cardi B, Bodak Yellow.
Fuck off.
Yes.
Didn't even finish it. The fuck? Okay. Are you ready for this one?
Yeah.
She looked me deep in the eyes. She's touching me so...
Yes, I know this.
To start, she says, there's no turning back. She trapped me in her heart.
I know this. Hang on. Oh my God, I know this. What the hell's this?
I don't know.
What are you doing a different theme for? No, hang on. No, I fucking know this.
She doesn't know it, lads.
I fucking do. As soon as the first line, I was like, I know this. Give me a sec. Okay, I didn't do different, like, musical interludes to confuse you.
Okay. I'm going to have to rush you for an answer.
Is there one more after this? Can I just ask? You said four?
Yes.
Okay. I know the song.
I'm still going to have to rush you for an answer.
Oh my God. The pressure.
She looks like she's about to have a stroke.
Because I know the song. The first few fucking words I knew. Nothing's coming to my head.
You're going to hate yourself when I say it.
I know.
I'm proud of this one.
I listen to this all the time.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I can't believe this.
This feels great.
You're enjoying this, aren't you? You're really enjoying it. Okay, actually, sorry, I'm just kind of trying to guess this. I gave you clues. Can you give me a clue?
Male solo artist. You didn't give me that many clues.
I can't. It's nothing. I can't think of it.
You give up?
Yeah.
Please just say into the mic, I give up.
I give up.
Dirty Diana. By Michael Jackson.
Fucking God. Fuck me, like. At the first few fucking words, I was like, yes, I know this.
You ready for your last one?
Go on.
Nah, you don't want to risk it. I'm what? Fucking starting to sound like it. So
No, you're not.
I am. Nah, you don't want to risk it. Man might draw from the big stick. You'll end up with your wig split.
What?
Nah, you don't want to risk it. Man might draw for the big stick. You'll end up with your wig split.
Stormzy, too big for your boots?
No.
I've no, it's your accent. You're throwing me off completely.
It's actually the correct accent for the song.
A up.
No.
What the hell? Other accent? Like, who else sings in that accent? Who the fuck?
Plenty of people.
That I like?
Arctic Monkeys do.
I'm not like a massive fan of Arctic Monkeys.
No, it's not Arctic Monkeys.
I don't really listen to them a huge amount. Say it again.
Nah, you don't want to risk it. Man might draw for the big stick. You'll end up with your wig split.
Man might draw for the big stick.
Yeah, it's basically...
I'll beat the shite out of you.
Yeah. Split ears open with a stick.
You're going to need to give me a clue.
You found this song because of me. You enjoy this song.
ETAP. What the fuck's his name? ETAP Rhythm?
No. That's the song, and no.
G-Star?
Yeah.
What the fuck? I don't know what his name is.
Nasty Boy.
Nasty Boy. Okay, I didn't do too bad. The Dirty Diana one, that's fucked me up. That's really fucked me up, but okay, I'll take it. Your accent really threw me on that last one.
But that's the accent in the fucking song.
No, it's not.
It fucking is.
Objection. That's fun. We need to do this more. I like that. That honestly, that was killing me.
I didn't think you'd get the Bodak Yellow.
Try me.
I didn't think you'd get any of them. That's why I threw the Triple X one in. I thought she's going to get that. She has to. But
Wait, you're most confident with that one. You didn't think I'd get Dirty Diana.
Oh, I knew you wouldn't get Dirty Diana. Knew it.
That's going to plague me now. I was like, oh, it's right there. What the fuck is it? Shit. That is fun. We'll do that again.
Yeah, well, it'll be your turn next.
I will gladly test you on further songs.
Yeah. Mm. But you got to do a better job than last time, because last time it was criminal.
What do you mean it was criminal? I gave you a
good
variety.
What you did to me were fucking criminal.
But I didn't ask you to do all songs that I like.
You bloody did.
You could have picked majority of songs that you like as long as I know them.
I didn't throw anything in what was like Rob Zombie. Like, I didn't throw in Morgan Wallen.
I'm glad you fucking didn't. No, but I gave you a variety. Like, I made sure that even the one song I like, you've heard it a million times.
Mm.
Mm. You were more than fair to me there. Fair play to you. But you didn't have to be. You could have made it more difficult for me.
I will do next time.
Please do. Bring it on.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
If you're a fan of true crime that's both compellingly and respectfully told, you need to check out Crime Salad. Each week, husband and wife Joe, Ashley and Ricky, dive deep into both well-known and lesser-covered cases, bringing you well-researched, thoughtfully narrated stories driven by a mission to uncover the truth, amplify victims' voices, and advocate for justice. One recent case they covered? The haunting disappearance of 11-year-old Trudy Appleby from Moline, Illinois. It was August of 1996 when Trudy vanished from her neighborhood without a trace. There was no sign of a struggle, no witnesses who could provide clear answers. And for nearly three decades, her case stood as one of the Quad Cities' most enduring mysteries. But while investigators chased false leads, Trudy's father never stopped pointing to the same small group of men he believed were responsible. For years, his pleas went unheard, until August of 2025, nearly 29 years later, when an arrest finally confirmed what he had been saying all along. Tragically, he passed away before he could see justice for his daughter. This is the story of Trudy Appleby, a child gone missing without a trace, a father's relentless fight for the truth, and a decades-long battle to hold those responsible accountable. Listen to the full episode, The Disappearance of Trudy Appleby, and explore more powerful cases like this one by searching Crime Salad wherever you get your podcasts.
So, it's Halloween.
No, it's not Halloween. No, we're recording this before Halloween. This is coming out the week after.
So Halloween's just over.
It was great. We had a lovely time.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, right piss up. What you got for us today?
Today, Neil, we are going to be talking about Karen Greenlee.
Okay.
But before we talk about Karen, we got to have a little chat about necrophilia.
I don't want to.
Well, you're gonna. So what is necrophilia? Necrophilia is classed as a paraphilia by the World Health Organization. And paraphilia is the sexual arousal by something outside of the normal scope of sexuality. It could be an object, a situation, or an individual.
Yeah, but who are you to say what's normal and what's not?
That's a fair point.
Thank you.
It's basically just outside of, you know, two adults, consensual sex kind of thing. There's some other angle to it.
Okay.
Essentially, I agree with you. The word normal is a little bit, but.
So you saying consensual, okay? Mm-hmm. Hear me out.
Well, I'm not, sorry. Hear me out. Hang on, just before you continue. When I say that, I'm not saying that, you know, some types of paraphilia aren't consensual.
Yeah.
I'm just saying the word normal is kind of, you know, for lack of a better word.
Well, this is what I was going to ask to do with necrophilia. I don't agree with this, but let's say there is a man and a woman together.
Mm-hmm.
She does a video vlog of her saying, when I die, I want him to sleep with my body. And then he goes and does it after she's snuffed it. And the police go to arrest him. It's like, no, you can't be doing that, you dirty bastard. And then he shows him the video. Does he get let out or not?
Right. Not exactly what you're saying with, like, you know, taped consent.
Mm.
I did come across a case while researching this where that happened.
Oh.
It was a man who had died, and apparently his last wish was for his wife to have sex with his body one last time.
Weirdo.
Mm.
Well, she's the fucking weirdo. Did she do it?
I believe so, yes.
Madness.
Again, not the band.
Yeah, it's never the band. But it is the House of Funnier.
It is indeed. No shout outs, I had to shoehorn it in there, didn't I? So there's a wide spectrum of what falls under paraphilia. From the relatively benign, like a particular preference to hands or feet, or liking certain items of clothing like lingerie or uniforms, to reaching the more depraved with the likes of paedophilia, zoophilia, and necrophilia. Hebristophilia, which we have previously discussed, is also defined as a paraphilia.
That's wanting to nob a criminal?
Yes.
Yeah. You okay?
You just, you have such a way with words. I really do love that about you. I will
right, you
try...
get your end away with a criminal.
Yeah, but I will try to word things, you know, like the correct way.
Yeah.
I will make an effort, you know?
Yeah.
And then you just come and go, is that nobbing a criminal? Yeah.
Yeah, but people like how real I am.
They do. They do appreciate
I'll just say it how it is.
Mm.
They're nobbing them.
They are nobbing them.
They're getting their end away. We're a criminal.
I never understood that term, getting your end away.
That's a northern thing.
And it doesn't make any sense. Like, do you know the origins of it? Origins of it, or?
No, it's just what you say. I'm going to get me end away.
Mm. Now, with necrophilia, a 10-tier classification system was developed by...
10?
10.
10?
I'm not going to go through all of them, because obviously... just the one episode. We might come back to it at some point. But yeah, 10.
Fucking 10?
10.
What is this? 10 different ways you can...
10 different ways you can what?
Well, I was going to say get your end away, but
I would say it's a 10-tier system of levels of depravity.
Okay.
A 10-tier classification system was developed by Anil Agarwal, a professor of forensic medicine.
Oh, do you know in your yarn about the different levels?
Mm-hmm.
Right, I don't mean to sound graphic, but do you mean whether they've got flesh or not?
What?
Like, do you mean...
the actual corpse?
Yeah.
No. It's the level of depravity that this person, the necrophile, may seek out or may be interested in.
Yeah, but that's what I mean.
No. So, it's not strictly
it's
related.
A part of decay.
It's not related to the level of decomposition of the body.
Right.
It's strictly what the necrophiliac wants to partake in.
Right. I don't understand yet, but I'll pretend I do.
Well, I'm going to break it down for you a bit. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
With class one describing those who enjoy role-playing this situation with a partner, all the way up to class 9, necrosadists, who kill for the purpose of engaging in necrophilia, and class 10, those who have an exclusive interest and cannot perform sexually with a living partner. So do you see what I'm saying? It's kind of someone who likes the idea of it. They don't actually want to do it, but they like the role play aspect.
Yeah.
And then we're getting up to the big boys.
I got in bed with someone and they went, do us a favour, play dead. Be like, fucking what?
Not doing all the work. Basically, what we're looking at here is it's kind of a Russian doll situation. It's a subset within a subset within, you know.
Mm.
So let's take a look at a few cases of necrophilia. Probably two of the most well-publicized cases of necrophilia are, yes, Ted Bundy and...
no idea.
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Oh, yeah.
But two cases which we have previously talked about are Richard Chase and Ed Gein. Now, with Ed, I know you're going to react.
Yeah.
And I'm on the same page as you, believe me. I never thought of Ed Gein. You know, I never thought the title of necrophiliac was an accurate one for him.
Mm.
And like I said, I know, Neil, you agree. With Ed, it always seemed a case of wanting to be rather than wanting to abuse or sexually abuse, if you know what I mean. You know, he didn't enjoy murder. He didn't like the smell of decomposition. It seems he viewed it as, I have to go through this to get what I want, was the human remains.
Yeah, it's like I said, you said it were a bit tactless of the way I said it, but essentially it's what it is. It was stock. He was... trying to get stuck.
I mean, I think I can't remember exactly what I said, but I believe when we covered it a while ago, for lack of better wording, it's the material he was using in his mind.
Yeah.
You know.
Stuck.
Not trying to justify it or downplay it, but in his mind, what he was creating.
Yeah.
You know. So let's forget about our personal opinions for a second and just look at the acts themselves. Although he didn't engage in intercourse, if Ed did find any of the acts sexually arousing, he could be in class 4,
which is tactile necrophiliacs, meaning he derived pleasure from touching a corpse.
Yeah, yeah.
So you see what I mean? There's a bit of room there when you're looking at like the 10-tier system.
Yeah.
He could be classified.
Yeah.
Or possibly class 6. Again, although he never engaged in intercourse, if Ed did masturbate while mutilating these bodies, then he would be categorized as a necromutilomaniac.
Right.
So, I'm not saying this is the case. I'm just putting forth the possibility. And, you know, I don't want to be so rigid in my opinion that I can't possibly consider the alternatives.
Mm.
Again, I don't think it's the right title for him, but with this system, there is the argument for it.
Yeah. If you want to hear our take on the Ed Gein series, we covered it on Patreon, but you can also get it from the Patreon shop as a one-off payment, because some people seem to be interested in our opinion. So back to the bodies.
Now, Richard Chase would probably fall between classes 9 and 10, a necrosadist who murders in order to abuse corpses, or the highest tier, someone who cannot become sexually aroused by the living and exclusively seeks out sexual activity with the deceased. Now, if you remember, Neil...
Well, no one would go near him, would they?
But a previous girlfriend did say that he struggled to perform sexually.
Yeah.
So Richard Chase could potentially be in the highest tier of necrophiliacs.
He was too busy squeezing oranges on his fucking ear, trying to get his vitamin C.
Hobbies. Now, what about the legality of necrophilia? In a lot of countries, necrophilia itself is not explicitly against the law, but there are quite often laws or acts in regards to the interference, misconduct, causing indignity, desecration, or such of a corpse. As of September 2024, Pakistan now recognises necrophilia as a crime punishable by life imprisonment. Good for you, Pakistan.
You got there in the end.
Well, don't you get on your fucking high horse just yet. In 2003, the UK criminalised acts of necrophilia, but the maximum sentence is just 2 years.
What?
Hmm? Necrophilia is very much a grey area, legally speaking, in a lot of countries. Pakistan are the ones, although it may be recent, they're like, stop it.
See, I always...
No good.
I always thought it would be the same sort of punishment as rape.
No, the UK are like, you know, don't really do it. And I'd prefer you didn't. That's kind of more their stance on it.
Oh.
Yeah.
What about Ireland?
I didn't actually check into Ireland.
Oh. Well, if you want, I could go into local Garda station and say, hey up, what's punishment for necrophilia? And see what the reaction is.
Hmm. I wouldn't recommend it. And in the US, there is no federal legislation against the act, but different states have their own laws regarding the issue. So you see what I'm getting at? It's this real fucking legal grey area.
Yeah, America always seems to be like that, don't they? You know, like how in the UK there's laws, in Ireland there's laws, in France there's laws.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it comes to America, it's like, well, you can't do that here, but if you go to the next state...
Well, I mean, that's what I mean. It's the United States we're talking about here.
Yeah.
And within the United States is the states with their own laws and their own... You know, it gets very fucking complicated and we don't really understand that as such.
Mm.
You know, you kind of think of the states as one big thing.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Yeah.
It's very different from state to state.
Like, imagine if you
I don't know what you're shitting on them for. You only give 2 years for necrophilia. So, like, you're basically just letting them off.
Nothing to do with me.
But you were shitting on others. You were like, oh, Pakistan, took you long enough. At least they did something. So, with a little bit of insight into what exactly necrophilia is and the legality surrounding it, let's talk about Karen Greenlee. Karen Greenlee was a young woman who, in the late 70s, worked as an apprentice embalmer at the Memorial Lawns Mortuary in Sacramento. Karen's story was the subject of much media attention, not just for the obvious reasons of necrophilia, or the horrifying reality that, because of her position, she had easy access to the bodies, but also because she was a woman.
Well, that's got nothing to do with it.
What do you mean it's got nothing to do with it?
Shagging corpses, doesn't matter what sex you are.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that it's a lower rate of women compared to men.
Oh, yeah.
It's the shock value of this, like, pretty young woman doing this horrifying, morbid, grotesque act.
Mm.
You know what I mean? That the media were fucking drawn in.
Yeah.
Looking back to her earlier life, Karen didn't have an easy go of it. At just 8 years of age, Karen was sexually assaulted. By the age of 11, she began exhibiting some behavioural differences, both emotionally and mentally, according to her mother. And not long before her 13th birthday, Karen was diagnosed with schizophrenia. She was said to have been, quote, living in a fantasy world. She was later admitted to the Napa State Hospital, where she would spend nearly 2 years in treatment. At the age of 14, while still in treatment, Karen was sexually assaulted again by a teacher.
Fucking hell.
Her father said, quote, she seemed to become a different person after that. She kept it to herself, and it grew on her. So, we can see how, given her experience of abuse in a sexual manner, particularly at a young age, may have warped her view on sex and her own sexuality.
Mm.
And as some necrophiliacs do, sought sexual gratification where they are completely in control of the situation. After being discharged from the hospital, her mother said that Karen struggled to reintegrate. And so she lived with a psychologist who became a temporary foster parent for a few months. When she moved back into her parents' home, she would remain there until the age of 19 when she married. But the marriage was short-lived, and Karen separated from her husband after just 6 months and moved back in with her parents.
Marriage. It's overrated, isn't it?
Especially at 19.
Yeah.
By this stage of her life, her mother said that her struggles with mental health had, quote, somewhat subsided, and that she seemed happy as she started her career as an apprentice embalmer at a mortuary in North Sacramento. Her mother also noted that Karen had never shown any particular morbid interest in death in her youth.
I don't want to sound ignorant, but how did someone with schizophrenia get a job embalming people?
Well, as we'll later find out, there wasn't adequate checks done. But I don't know if just because someone has schizophrenia that should limit their job opportunities.
Mm.
I mean, like, as the employer,
yeah,
assuming she is being treated,
yeah,
for her condition, you shouldn't really, you know, you don't have a reason,
well,
to suspect.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, that's what I meant by my ignorance, because I don't know if there is restrictions.
Also, I'm not going to say like, because she's a woman, but let's be realistic. The majority of people are going to be quicker to suspect a guy than they are a woman of this. They just are.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, of this, but you could be like taking selfies with the corpses and stuff.
By the age of 21, Karen was working at the Memorial Lawns Mortuary in Sacramento, California, as an apprentice embalmer. She lived in an apartment above the mortuary, which gave her access to the bodies at night. On the 10th of December, 1979, a 33-year-old man by the name of John McCure passed away. His death was the result of mixing his prescription pills with alcohol. In the mid-70s, John was incarcerated after being convicted of arson. Following his release, he spent the last 11 months of his life living with his mother. The night of his death, John had been upset and drinking after he found out that his girlfriend had been seeing someone else. Because of his You okay?
Yeah, I'm just tutting.
Tutting at what?
Playing away.
This is the second time you took issue with a woman cheating, but not a man.
No, anyone who cheats.
Fritz, you didn't seem to have that much of an issue with. I think you justified it as saying, yeah, but they were volatile, weren't they? Because of his irritable state, he and his mother, Marion, had gotten into a fight. She left the house and told him to sleep it off. By the time she'd arrived home, her son had died. John's body arrived at the Memorial Lawns Mortuary, where Karen started to form an attachment to him. John was to be buried on the 17th of December, 1979,
On the day of his funeral, Karen was driving the 1975 Cadillac hearse, which contained his body. As she approaches the location of what should have been John's burial, Karen decides not to.
Not to what?
Not to bring the body to his funeral.
You can't do that.
Well, Karen couldn't bear the thought of his body being buried, so she takes off in the hearse with John's body.
Please tell me this goes to a police chase.
No.
Oh.
Karen, along with the hearse and the body, wouldn't be found until 2 days later and about 2 hours away in the foothills of Sierra County.
Okay, now.
She was undressed and laid in the back of the hearse next to the open casket. She had attempted suicide by overdosing on Tylenol and codeine. She had also left a 4.5-page letter dated the 18th of November.
I couldn't be asked reading that.
Well, don't worry, Neil. I'm not going to read the entirety of the 4.5-page letter, but I am going to read you some excerpts from it.
Okay.
Within this letter, she wrote, quote, "I either have to accept the fact that I'm a necrophiliac and adjust to it. I know I can. Or get the Sam Hill out of here and never set eyes on another mortuary. And somehow, somewhere, build a new life for myself."
Who the fuck's Sam Hill?
That's like an expression. Like, get the hell out of here.
Is it?
I always thought it was Sam Hell. Apparently it's Sam Hill. But, you know, you learn something new every day.
Never heard of it. Is that a Yankee thing?
I think so, yeah. She also mentions that she had previously called social services because she, quote, wanted help, but not to be locked up. Quote, "They ask a lot of irrelevant questions. Where do you work? Your name? Well, folks, I'm crazy, but I'm not stupid. I hung up on them. Maybe I hung up on myself. I don't know." Another section reads, quote, "I went down the squeaky stairs too, redacted. Well, I checked out his stomach. He turned me on. I kissed him on his mouth. I felt a big rush of emotion. Pain, loneliness, guilty, fear. And also comfort. I wonder if the before, knotted stomach, climbing the walls, or the after, guilt, tiredness, irritable, is worth the during. Emotional and sexual gratification. I'm in a dark prison all alone. Please wake me up. I'm only a child. I want to live and be a normal girl to a woman. I've written this from what's left of my broken heart. If you read this, please don't hate me. I was once like you. I laugh, I loved, but something went wrong. I wish Renee would come back. She was a nice child. She knew no necrophilia." Now, Renee was a childhood name, apparently, just in case you're like, who the fuck's your name?
Oh, I was about to ask.
"Why do I do it? Why? Why? Fear of love. Relationships. No romance ever hurt like this. It's the pits. I'm a morgue rat. This is my rat hole. Perhaps my grave." So, given that she had dated the letter a month previous to the discovery of her necrophilia, it would appear that Karen had been wrestling with her own emotions towards her desires for at least a month or so.
Yeah.
Probably since she started.
Mm.
Karen would later admit that she could not achieve sexual satisfaction through sexual contact with a living person. And in her short career as an embalmer, she had abused between 20 to 40 bodies, which she did in the embalmer's room among other locations of the mortuary.
Oh, so she was cheating on your man? No, because I thought, no, you're laughing, but I thought she had a connection with this other corpse.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just anybody. Literally.
This is, you know, again, lads, in no way trying to downplay the severity here. But when Karen kind of, you know, the whole notion of, I couldn't bear to see him go. I'd like formed, you know, not that it's right, but in her mind, if she'd formed a bond.
Yeah.
You could have some level of compassion for the mental illness and what's going on.
Yeah.
But if you're abusing up to 40 corpses.
Yeah. You're just getting your underwear.
This is a sexual thing. This is just for your sexual gratification. Yeah. What the fuck are you Yeah. What are you doing?
I don't want to sound disgusting, but she's just getting her end away.
Getting her end away.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Now, what Karen did, there wasn't a law against the act itself. So what were they to charge her with?
Theft of a body.
Well, like we had previously discussed, necrophilia is one of those kind of, we didn't even think we needed a law against it kind of things, you know? In March of 1980, Karen pleaded guilty to interfering with a burial and theft of a hearse.
Oh. I'm actually a bit pissed off at that.
I don't blame you. You're about to get more pissed off. For her crimes, Karen spent 11 days in jail, was fined $255, and was placed on a 2-year probation with a recommendation that she seek treatment.
Days. She did days.
11 days.
They really don't take it seriously, do they?
No. More so now, because bear in mind, this was the late 70s when it happened. So, there are some more laws and acts in place.
Hmm.
But overall, it is just kind of seen as a grey area.
So, can I make a guess?
You can.
She reoffends. She reoffends, and I'll tell you for why. If I enjoyed doing it, and that's all I got, I'd do it again. Because, like, if you think about the way she was talking in a suicide note, she can't help, she has to do this. Like, she will live her life around it.
Yeah, like it's an impulsion kind of thing.
She's going to do it again.
Well, in 1982, Karen was back in court.
There we go.
Marion Gonzalez, John's mother, sued both Karen and the Memorial Lawns Mortuary. She was seeking compensation and punitive damages to the value of between $1 and $1.5 million due to emotional damage. Some thought this was an incredibly high amount of money to be seeking. But what price do you put on something like this? Especially as Karen had chosen to do this on the day of his funeral. It just makes her actions more detestable and, arguably, did cause a greater deal of suffering to the family.
Yeah.
It's bad enough that her son had died, but Karen took away her chance to say goodbye.
Could you imagine? So, one of the hardest days a mother can live is burying their own child.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got this.
Well, this is the thing. Marion was said to have fell into depression after what had happened and used alcohol to cope with the trauma.
I'm not surprised.
Well, that's also a physical effect on your body.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, you mean like giving liver a kick in?
Yeah. I'm not saying you can directly blame Karen for it, but you caused... Yeah, exactly. You caused so much more pain and suffering to this woman. This never should have happened. I can't imagine the pain of losing a child. And yes, John may have been 33 at the time of his death, but to Marion, you know, he's always going to be her child.
As Leah Remini once said, the chain of causation.
Another reason why the amount requested was so large was to make an example out of this case and to deter any further acts of necrophilia in mortuaries. Again, I agree. Especially as there are no laws preventing such acts, and not that it will necessarily prevent this from happening, but it definitely does make a statement. Her attorney argued that the greater deal of culpability lies with the mortuary.
for not following through with a thorough background check and subsequently allowing this to happen. He said it was a case of, quote, corporate indifference and reckless disregard for the consequences of acts committed by a young woman who was obviously in a state of mental deterioration. Karen Greenlee, in my judgment, is a tragically ill person.
Say that again. You don't have to have a PhD to fucking work that out.
Her former employee stated that he did not extensively check her background, as she came highly recommended. Quote, I felt he'd already done the necessary checking beyond what I would have to do. All the things he said about her indicated I should hire her.
So basically, you couldn't be arsed.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck is that? You taking the piss?
It was argued that employees should have noticed that something was off, like when Karen was working what was described as excessive overtime.
Did you say at the beginning, but she was pretty?
Well, like, you know, like an attractive young female, you
there
know
you
what
go,
I mean?
There you go, problem solved. That's why she got the job.
I'm not saying like she was like particularly dolled up or anything like that. You know what I mean? I'm just saying like...
To a creepy man.
She's female and she's young, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so...
Men, you know what I mean? You know what they're like.
Yeah. Know exactly what they're like, especially when they're hiring.
The mortuary denied any knowledge of what Karen had been doing. The defence for the mortuary stated, quote, I know no one may agree with me, but I think she fantasised all of this. Necrophilia is just about unheard of.
Oh, so that means she made it up?
I mean, like, this is something he was clearly taking from her previous diagnosis and hospitalisation as a teenager.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a cop-out. Come on.
When Karen was asked about the letter that she had left, she said, quote, It's been a while. I've kind of blotted that out of my mind. I'm just trying to get on with my life. Although Karen had stated she had previous strong impulses to commit acts of necrophilia, she said the first time she followed through with it was at the Sacramento Memorial Lawn Mortuary. Now remember, she'd previously worked elsewhere.
Yeah.
In his closing argument, Karen's attorney stated that, quote, She has already been punished enough.
Has she?
Punitive damages will prevent Karen Greenlee from getting on with her life.
She's what? 11 days in Nick.
Mm-hmm.
A fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then what was it? Restrictions on employment?
Recommendation to seek treatment.
Recommendation?
Mm-hmm.
She's been through enough.
Look, I understand the point he's making in terms of like trial by media.
Mm.
I do get that. Even if I want to see Karen's side of it and I want to have some level of compassion in terms of this is a young person who probably doesn't have a lot of money,
yeah,
trying to get more money, it's not really going to do anything. It's only going to hindrance her from getting on with her life. What the fuck's that got to do with John's mother?
Well, this is what,
do you know what I mean?
This is what, like, I was just about to say. Been through enough. You imagine stood patiently waiting, bawling your eyes out at what's going to be your son's grave,
mm-hmm,
seeing the hearse start pulling up and then fuck off.
Do a Yui.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, where the fuck are they going?
Yeah. Exactly.
In the end, Marion was awarded $142,500.
So I pay for Ed's doing.
The jury of 7 men and 5 women spent 6.5 hours deliberating before returning a vote. $125,000 in compensation to be paid by the mortuary, and $17,500 in punitive damages to be paid by Karen.
6.5 hours?
Mm-hmm.
They were milking it for the free tea and biscuits.
Well, the jury said that what they'd struggled to decide on was the level of responsibility which should be attributed to the mortuary, which I understand. Are you putting more on Karen or the actual employer who allowed her to be in that position? Put yourself in their shoes for a sec. I know you're not hearing the entire case.
Yeah.
But... From what you know of it, do you think more of the employee, especially hearing him say, oh, she came highly recommended? You know?
No. It's obviously more on her. Like, unless there was cameras,
mm-hmm,
which in the 70s probably wasn't, they're not to know, but she was going back down for a fondle at night.
I would argue probably about 70-30 split against Karen. Like, I think Karen is about 70% responsible,
hmm,
but I don't think we can, like, negate the fucking mortuary.
Oh no, no, I'm not. You know? I'm not taking it all.
Oh no,
off
yeah,
the,
no,
off
I know.
The company.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
I'd say it's more 75-25.
That 5% matters. Yeah, we're about on the same page there. I mean, she is the one who chose to do this. Mm. She exploited her position, but at the end of the day, still they could have done a bit more. But at the end of the day, they're gonna like necrophiliac's gonna be a necrophiliac.
Yeah.
Something that kind of bothered me about this trial was that some argued that Marion was not severely damaged by Karen's actions and tried to say that she had fought with her son in regards to his drinking the night before his death, you know, as if that had any bearing on the issue at hand. If anything, you know, surely is that not more reason for her to be upset? Her last interaction with her son was a negative
one. Yeah, it's not here or there.
Mm. But one thing that all of the jurors were said to have agreed on was a feeling of compassion towards Karen.
See, this...
When you're in that room and you're hearing the full arguments, how she's feeling, her yeah. mental... You know, it's a different ballgame.
Yeah.
From the outside, we're like, what the fuck, Karen?
Well, right. I'm actually glad that you brought that up because then I can say this. So me and Megan, we were only talking last night about... you know, my concentration span isn't the best. But I am listening to Megan when she's telling the case. For some reason, it sinks in more when I'm doing the editing. Always does.
Mm-hmm.
And when we covered the murder of Doreen Herbert, obviously it's a brutal case. And I was listening. But after editing... You know, and I'm hearing it all again, and I'm hearing it over and over again. And I just turned to Megan and I went, I actually feel a bit sorry for Michael. Like, if you actually think about it, his son died. He obviously was hit with depression, but then his life was just falling apart for 4 years. Imagine if he had no one with him for 4 years. I'm not, like, again, I said to you, I'm not condoning what he did. So, yeah, if I was in the jury, I'd probably be not a sucker, but I'd be more compassionate than I would out of the courtroom.
Yeah, no, I do agree with you. I take your point on the Doreen Herbert case. With Michael, you know, there is a level of compassion for someone struggling with their mental health. And I do wish we had talked about it a little bit more in the episode. Mm. It's a very fair point. And yeah, it's the same thing here with Karen. Well, not exactly the same, but, you know. She'd been through it. She had. She had not had an easy life. Yeah. Her parents were said to have been great to her and very supportive, but there was a few incredibly traumatic events in her life.
Yeah.
And then, of course, with her mental health, with the, you know, schizophrenia diagnosis, you know, that's something she's got to contend with.
Mm.
Outside of the court, her father stated, quote, "She is a human being, a lovable little girl, and her parents do care. I want to protect her." And again, feeding back into it. To them, that's their little girl.
Yeah.
You know? Now, in a plot twist, Marion's attorney later offered to represent Karen against the insurance company who refused the judge's $75,000 out-of-court settlement, which would have saved both Karen and Marion from having to go to trial.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, just an interesting little thing to throw in there.
You don't really hear of that, do you?
Why didn't... they accept that.
Yeah.
You know, again, regardless of your opinions of Karen and what she's done and whether you have any compassion or you think absolutely fucking not, why have you done that to John's mother?
Obviously.
Why have you made her go through trial? What?
More money.
No, it's the insurance company that didn't want to pay out.
Oh, okay.
You're turning a Marion there.
Okay.
Now, quick note before we finish up with the trial details. During jury selection, the judge stated, quote, "This case will involve acts that are repulsive or revulsive or even grotesque." After the jury had been selected, they of course need to choose a foreman of the jury. And no one seemed keen to take on the task, so a 19-year-old named Gary Schleppi stepped up. It was his first time serving on a jury, and what a fucking case to get.
Yeah.
He would later say, quote, "This was all very interesting. What's funny is that I got to sit on the jury at all. I was really shocked when the attorney let me stay.
I thought me being as young and all that, they'd feel I couldn't make a rational, unbiased judgment.
Just me talking. Young and all that.
Honestly, like. He also stated that when he initially heard the word necrophilia, he confused it with nymphomania, but that he quickly learned the difference. Good old Gary, huh? 19?
Yeah.
You know?
What was I doing at 19?
19 serving on a jury is enough.
Yeah.
This fucking case. Yeah. Jesus. In 1987, Karen was interviewed by Jim Morton. The interview was titled The Unrepentant Necrophile. And let me tell you, that is a fairly accurate title. Karen appeared to have changed her stance on necrophilia. She was now embracing it. But I do think it's important to note that Karen has been reported to have later regretted this interview.
So could that be down to like a dodgy turn on meds or something?
That's exactly what I was going to say. I wonder at the time of this interview, was she unmedicated or was she self-medicating?
Yeah.
You know, I'm just going to give her that bit of leeway because this interview was quite something. Quote, when I wrote that letter, I was still listening to society. Everyone said necrophilia was wrong, so I must be doing something wrong. But the more people tried to convince me I was crazy, the more sure of my desires I became. She speaks of how guys would make comments like, you haven't met the right guy yet, that they could be the one to turn her away from necrophilia. Which,
they say that to lesbians.
Look, I'm on Karen's side with this. Yeah. I'm like, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, they say that to lesbians.
She speaks of the different aspects of sexual expression and goes on to say, quote, the cold, the aura of death, the smell of death, the funereal surroundings, it all contributes. She describes some of the effects on the bodies of the deceased while she was, as she puts it, quote, making passionate love.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. She talks about attending the funerals of some of the men whose bodies she had sexually abused and mourned alongside their family members. She said that people can't tell if you're grief-stricken or passion-stricken.
Like the passionate love, it was very one-sided.
She said that she'd been compared to Richard Chase, something that seemed to offend her, which I can understand in regards to the fact that she's not a murderer, but you know, you do have some similar tendencies.
Well, she weren't squeezing oranges on her ear.
Do you think that's the bit that she was offended by? How dare you? They were cantaloupes.
Yeah.
When she speaks of Richard Chase's crimes and the child that he killed, she says, quote, kidnapped their child, killed it, later threw it in a trash can. Killed it? It? Karen, come on. You're not helping yourself. She also speaks of breaking into a mortuary and again, her words, not mine, quote, had me some fun.
One-sided fun.
Quote, probably a lot of people would do it if they had the opportunity.
Would they? I can, right. Hand on hat, where's the Bible? I'll put my hand on the Bible and say this. I would not.
No, it wouldn't be for me.
No.
Wouldn't be my scene now, lads. I'll just state that now because you did a lot of audio clips of me saying some fucking some diabolical shit in this episode. When asked if she finds it frustrating when people say that she needs curing of necrophilia, she replies, quote, it is. For a while, I found myself thinking, yeah, this isn't normal. Why can't I be like other people? Why doesn't the same pair of shoes fit me just right? I went through all that personal hell and finally I accepted myself and realized that's just me. That's my nature. I might as well enjoy it. Necrophilia makes sense for me.
Maybe try a different brand.
Look, in regards to accepting it, if we're talking about the fact that you have a problem and working to rectify or manage it, then yes, I understand.
Hmm.
What I don't fucking understand is trying to say, that's just me.
Yeah.
I'm crazy like that. I'm so, you know, like.
And in regards to shoes, just try a different brand.
Yeah, I heard you the first time. I tried to just breeze past it.
Look, we're not talking about someone who has like an odd or like niche liking for something, you know, like a fucking weird food pairing or enjoying like a feeling or texture of a certain type of material or, you know.
Yeah.
It's not the, like, again, like I said, the kind of more like less offensive side of it.
Mm.
You want to sexually abuse a corpse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Karen, come on. Like I mentioned, Karen was reported to have regretted this interview, and I can certainly see why. Her nonchalant and at times arrogant attitude towards behaviour is frightening. How many would view this as a dead person cannot consent? It would appear, and I don't want to put words in her mouth, but the attitude here seems to be they no longer need to consent.
But they do.
No, I'm saying it appears that will be Karen's logic.
Yeah, yeah.
And like I said, I don't want to speak for her. I don't know. But to be now, like I said, kind of embracing it and being like, well, this is just my kink kind of thing. It's like, no, it's not. Like, you can't, no. Yeah.
It's not like...
How far are we going to go to allow
certain behaviours? It's not like playing with leather.
This is what I mean. It's not like a certain material or a situation, like fantasy thing.
Yeah.
You're actually doing it.
Mm.
Stop it. It's no good.
So the way she's putting it is like me at school when I was a kid. And I'm not the only kid who did it. All kids did it. Where you'd put glue on your hand and then you'd let it dry and then you'd peel it off. She's trying to play it as if it's like that.
What the fuck? Where are you going with that? Oh, yeah, I didn't know if you were going for like a weird skin thing there. What was happening?
No, it wasn't a skin thing, but you were obsessed with it, weren't you? All
you liked the feeling of peeling it off your skin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know where I was going with it, but I did have a point.
Yeah, like we just stared at each other. It was like a bit of a standoff there. No, I get what you're saying. It's like inoffensive. I'm not hurting anyone. Yeah. I'm not infringing on anyone's rights or anything like that.
Right, so you knew exactly what I meant. You just wanted to make me squirm.
No, but I didn't know if you were relating it to like a literal skin thing.
No.
Well, you could have just said like a texture thing. You could have just been like, I love the feeling of leather.
Mm.
Is there any particular like materials you like?
Well, that's why it popped into my head. So, glue. And like,
so latex.
And like wax seal.
So you're
like,
into latex, is that what you're saying? Is that your thing?
No.
Oh. Wax.
Yeah, you know when I've been doing the wax seals for the envelopes?
Yeah. Like, but you pour a little bit on your hand, do you?
No. Obviously not. It's fucking hot, you knob. No, but like where it goes a bit thicker on the edge from when you've put the seal down, when it's got a bit of girth to it.
Oh. Uh-huh.
It's hard to explain.
You like picking at it.
I'll fiddle with it.
What? Yeah, I get what you mean. Like a fidgety thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. In August of 1982, John's body was exhumed to be buried alongside family in Michigan. His mother said that she couldn't bear to keep her son within the Memorial Lawn Cemetery. She was unable to afford to do so before, but after being awarded the damages, she was now able to lay her son to rest. Karen would later claim that she sat in a field nearby watching the exhumation.
Okay, that's a bit fucking weird.
Yeah, well, that is the case of necrophiliac embalmer Karen Greenlee. Neil, thoughts? I'm sure you have some.
I'm just as outraged to find out, but this isn't really illegal. I'm just as annoyed as I was when I found out about the burial leasing.
Mm-hmm.
How this isn't illegal. I just...
Yeah. There's so many things.
Crazy. That's
like just great. Because like, people just go, oh, you can't, it's against the law. And they don't actually know the laws or know the acts or know exactly, you know what I mean? But, you know, as much as I think you should have learned that before shouting your mouth off, it's... You know, I understand why someone would assume something is illegal or against the law, you know?
So this isn't against the law, but doing an Ed stand in front of Buckingham Palace is.
No, I can't be doing that. Very disrespectful.
Like, madness.
Well, can I, again, not the band. Can I ask, did you enjoy the little bit of look into necrophilia. Do you like when we do an episode that's like kind of...
Treats kind of me out a bit, does to it? Be honest.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you mean the topic itself or... I take you mean the topic. I don't know why learning about something would creep you out. So I don't really know why I asked that.
Yeah, it puts an image in your head, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not very pleasant.
Well, I was thinking we might come back. I was thinking we might come back at some stage to do a more in-depth look at necrophilia. You know, because this episode kind of, it's centered more on one case or maybe an episode on paraphilia itself. Would you find that interesting?
Which one's the para one?
Paraphilia is, you know, basically kind of like sexual arousal by something outside of the normal spectrum.
It depends what fucking comes up.
There's such a wide scope. There is over 500 different paraphiliac terms.
I've got a feeling I know what one of them's going to be and I don't want to hear about that.
What?
Animals.
Yeah.
No,
I'm not going to get into detail. I'm not going to like do an episode like breaking down and giving you all these gory fucking details. I'm just saying.
Give me tips.
I'm just, mortals, let me know if you'll be interested in learning about the topic more so of necrophilia or paraphilia.
Mm.
Or if you just think I'm taking the piss, if it's going too far. But I mean, I think human sexuality really is a fascinating topic. And again, like there's, you know, like I said, it's the Russian doll thing. It's a topic within, it's all these subsets.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting.
And like you said, you know, majority of them is going to be men because if they can put the knob in it, they will.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, mortals, just let me know if you want me to sit and listen to this. Is this something you would want to listen to? Sitting listening to me suffer?
Always.
Because a fucking smile on your face, because you know they're going to be
Yeah. Do you know what the thing is? Reading the episode now, reading it back, it doesn't feel too bad. You know what I mean?
Because researching it,
You remember me when I was reading through some of this shit. I was literally like, I can't, like, this is a lot. Is this too far? Is this too much?
Yeah.
But I think it's not, how I've told, I think it's palatable. As much as it can be for the topic of necrophilia.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, I
was getting a bit worried at the start. I was like, where's she going to go with this? How much detail is going
to
be in this?
No, I'm not here trying to like turn people's stomachs.
Yeah.
Be aware that this shit does happen, but I'm not trying to kind of do the shock value thing. You know what I mean? It's not needed.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
So, auditor.
Ethical bastard. So, we've previously talked about a man who was beyond ethics. Now we're talking about a particularly aware fella.
He was all about the ethics.
All about it.
But his parents weren't married.
What?
But his parents weren't married.
What are you talking about?
We said bastard.
Oh, I didn't... don't take it literally.
Oh.
I'm just using the word bastard just because I like it.
Okay.
On Saturday, the 16th of January, 2021, in Beaverton, Oregon, a woman enters the Basic Meats Market just before 9 a.m. As she was only picking up a couple of items and was parked just 15 feet away with the car in view from within the shop, she leaves the car unlocked and the engine running. A few minutes into her shop, she notices someone driving away in her SUV.
Serves you right.
Well, she begins to panic, because not only has her car been stolen, but her 4-year-old child was sitting in the back seat.
Okay, now it's a bit bad.
Now, luckily for this woman, the thief was, like I said, an ethical bastard, at least to some degree, and drove back to return the child to his mother.
What? And just said, but I'm still taking your car.
Oh yeah, he then takes off again in her car, but not before giving this woman a piece of his mind. He berates the woman for leaving her kid in the car and lectures her on the dangers of leaving a child unattended, and even threatened to report her to the police.
That's the sort of thing I could see me doing. I'd go to nick a car. Yeah, I could see that happening.
Well, I was going to ask you, what are your opinions on leaving your kid in the car? Because when I was a kid, like, not that my parents did all the time, but it was fairly normal.
How old was the kid?
4.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Nah, a bit too young. Double it.
Double it?
Yeah.
I can't remember. I'm not going to say I was 4, but I do remember being in the car when, you know, my parents ran to the petrol station or quickly ran to the shop. I didn't go in. You know, it was fairly normal.
Yeah.
But having said that, only the other day we stopped at the petrol station and I noticed this woman struggling, carrying the, you know, the baby, the carrier thing.
Mm.
It wasn't like the car seat, but like, you know, I'm getting it.
Yeah.
And she was like struggling, carrying it, trying to go into the fucking petrol station and back out. And I straight away immediately thought of that, like, she knows. She's not leaving her fucking kid. She's not risking it, even for 2 seconds.
Yeah. Well, yeah, actually. Why are you so lenient with a child?
No, I wouldn't do this.
Oh.
I'm just saying, a lot of people, at least in our age group,
okay,
you know, it was norm. I personally wouldn't.
Yeah, I was about to come at you, but fine.
About to come at you hard.
No, I was going to be like, no, hang on, why have you been lenient with this? But you see a dog sat outside a supermarket and you fucking lose the plot. Shit.
Yeah, I don't like that at all. Guarantee your parents left you in the car.
Yeah.
Didn't even crack a window, did they? Luckily, the child was unharmed, and the mother would later say of the incident, quote, "As moms, we get really busy. And we think we're just running in for a second. This is just a perfect example of letting our guards down and how terribly it could have ended.
This is just a cop-out.
So I'm just thankful that he's okay. It was so stupid, and I'll never do it again. But it's a split-second decision that could just change everything."
It's a fucking cop-out, is what it is.
What do you mean it's a cop-out?
Us women, as mothers.
But she's admitting she did wrong.
Busy lifestyle.
No, but she's being realistic. You do that. You kind of go, oh, I'll just quickly do it. It's going to be fine. I'll quickly, you know, it's always that, isn't it?
Stupid
quickly
twat.
Do this. No, because in your mind, I'm going to quickly do this. But you're not thinking about how quickly the child abductor can also get to your child.
No, I am. Of course I am.
I don't. If we had a fucking kid, you would be leaving them in the car all the time. And I fucking know you would. You're full of shit.
Nah, I wouldn't. I absolutely would not. Nah. I wouldn't even leave Norman in the car.
I would fight you if you did. The vehicle was found a few hours later in Portland, but there was no signs of the child advocating thief. Now, I'm glad she learned a lesson from this, but it's one thing to leave your kid in the car. It's another to leave the fucking keys in the ignition.
Yeah, engine was running.
That's the bit where I'm really like, what the fuck
stupid
are you doing?
Stupid twat.
Now.
You want my thoughts?
Please.
Man's a hero.
Man's a hero?
Yeah.
No, I mean, fair play to him. I mean, a car is a car. It's upsetting when something like that happens to you.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's an object.
Yeah.
I love that he fucking braided her and threatened to call the police.
Yeah. Please, if you're listening, get in touch with us. I'd love to talk to the guy.
So that's your stance anyway. You would not leave a child in the car.
No. And until they're 8.
Why 8? Why are you so, like...
I think at 8, you know...
Why not 10?
Well, you can do it 10. I'm saying at the earliest, 8.
Why at the earliest 8? Why not the earliest 10?
At 8, you can just chuck a tablet at them and go, watch SpongeBob.
Wait, hang on. You don't think 4-year-olds are sat there with tablets now?
Yeah, but they also piss and shit on themselves, don't
4-year-olds?
They? 4-year-olds. Oh, no, 4-year-olds.
Not, I mean, like, I'm sure 4-year-olds still have accidents, but generally speaking, they're fucking toilet trained by 4.
Hmm. Yeah, but they've got no awareness.
You at 8. Did you have any awareness?
I had more than I did at 4.
Did you, though? Could you imagine if you had a tablet at that age?
I probably still wouldn't know how to speak.
No.